right. Welcome, everybody. We're starting back in the Department of Finance and continuation of our meeting from a couple of days ago. So first of all, I'm going to read the substitutions. So for Cape Spear, M.A.J. Wall, M.A.J. Purdy is here. For M.A.J. Tripper, we have M.H. Minister Lovelace. For M.A.J. Gavin Mulch, we have Mr. Studley. And for M.A.J. Corab, we have Minister Davis prepared the meeting, and M.A.J. Corab will be here for the other part of the meeting. So next on the agenda, we will move the minutes of the meeting on April the 15th, moved by Minister Lovelace, second by M.A.J. Purdy. All those in favor?
Aye.
Against? Carried. All right, a bit of housekeeping before we get going. Of course, most people were here to know that you need to waive, and because we have a new system in place, sometimes it's a bit delayed. So just to, you know, wait for the light. Always repeat your name before, because for recording purposes, we need to know who is speaking, and the people behind the cameras, the microphones, may not know everybody in the room. Also, the water coolers are in the back, and we ask you not to adjust your chairs. So we're going to go around and identify everybody. I know we've done it before, but there's a few different people here, so we're going to do the identification. M.H.A. Paddock.
M.H.A. Paddock. MHA for Bayvert, Green Bay.
Hi, Megan Winter, Research and Policy Analyst with the Office of the Official Opposition.
MHA Craig Purdy, District of Bonavista.
Jim Din, MHA for St. John's Center.
Scott Fleming, Research and Policy Analyst, NDP.
Sarah Studley, MHA for Mount Sio.
Bernie Davis for the beautiful district of Virginia Waters, Pleasantville.
Elvis Loveless, District of Forge Bay, Cape Town.
Eileen Anderson, GMO Research.
Minister.
Siobhan Cody, MHA, St. John's West.
Michelle Dewar, Deputy Minister of Finance.
David Drover, Assistant Deputy Minister, Finance.
Doug Trask, ADM, Economics, Fiscal and Statistics.
Elizabeth Lane, Secretary to Treasury Board.
Lisa Curran, ADM, Human Resources, Treasury Board Secretariat.
James Duty, Director of Benefits Administration.
Brendan Hanlon, Comptroller General.
Nicole Abbott, Departmental Controller.
Diana Quinton, Communications.
Tom Nemec, Director, Treasury Management.
Bruce Keating, President and CEO with the Newfoundland and Labrador Liquor Corporation.
Cheryl Witten, Chief Financial and Information Officer with Newfoundland and Labrador Liquor Corporation.
Thank you very much, and I'm going to ask the clerk to call the first headings.
Consolidated Fund Services, 1.1.01 to 1.4.01 inclusive, servicing of the public debt.
1.1.01 to 1.4.01, and I'm going to ask Minister Cody if she would like to continue on with a few opening remarks.
Thank you very much, Chair. Wonderful to be back here this afternoon on such a lovely day. I will say that we have invited Newfoundland and Labrador Liquor Corporation to join us today. I'm very happy and pleased to have the CEO, Bruce Keating, as well as CFO, Cheryl Witten, here this afternoon. I've spoken, I think we're all in agreement that to be expeditious with our time, we'll go to NLC in case there's any questions for the Newfoundland and Labrador Liquor Corporation. Allow me to say that it's a very well-run, and congratulate Mr. Keating on such a well-run organization. As you've noted over the last few years, we've actually now have increasing and basically, I think, historic dividends coming from Newfoundland and Labrador Liquor Corporation. Last year, we budgeted $201 million in the 24-25 budget, and I think we're going to realize $210 million this year because of improved sales and improved management, and I thank them for that. This year in budget, we have $206 million that we're anticipating, so a $5 million increase over last year in terms of budgeting purposes. And that's mostly because of the improving and improved economy as well as the proceeds from cannabis sales. I will say, Liquor Corporation, just to give you an example, when you look at sales to dividends of Newfoundland Liquor Corporation to other organizations of the same ilk, for example, in New Brunswick or Nova Scotia, our sales to dividend is 54% here in Newfoundland and Labrador, 54% sales to dividend. In New Brunswick, it's 38%, and in Nova Scotia, it's 33%. I think that is an illustrative of how well-run Newfoundland and Labrador Liquor Corporation is, and of course, 630 well-paid employees across a full network, and we're continuously improving and updating, and we have a very strong and dedicated board of directors, and of course, Mr. Keating is well regarded, well known within the industry, but also in the convenience and commodity industry. So, I'll leave it at that, and welcome Mr. Keating and Mr. Witten. To Estimates is the first time Newfoundland Labrador Liquor Corporation has ever been before Estimates, and there's only one line in the Estimates book pertaining to the Liquor Corporation, of course, but I have distributed their annual report for your edification that's been published. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cody, and we're going to start with the first round of questions. We're going to start with 15 minutes for the first round and 10 minutes for every round after that. And we are going to be dealing for the first one for Witten and Flinders for operation, MHA Paddock.
MHA Paddock. So after quickly digesting the annual report over the past 5 minutes and your preamble, I guess I'm now in a position to ask three or four questions on NLC. So looking at Schedule 1, and I'm not sure the CEO if you have that in front of you, but I'm just there's a slight decrease forecasted for NLC, and it's budgeted for fiscal year 25-26 of $206,624. I'd just like to hear from you with regards for that slight decrease.
Chair? Siobhan Cody, allow me to just say a few words in that. As I indicated in my opening remarks, last year we budgeted $201. We came in at $210, and that was our dividend because they had increased sales, which was excellent. So we've budgeted for a $5 million increase this year to $206 from the $201 last year, with hopes we might have a very good year again. But I will turn that over to the CEO.
Bruce Keating. First of all, thank you for the question and the opportunity to be here, because I've been with the NLC now for 5 years, a little bit beyond that, and it's the first opportunity to come and do this, so thank you very much for that. In terms of the Schedule 1, the revised number for 2024-25, in fact, there is a revision of that. That should be 210-674, so it's a smaller drop from 210 down to 206. That kind of reflects, like I say, this past year has been an extremely good year in terms of weather, in terms of special events that took place over the course of the year. And cannabis sales continue to be very strong as well. So I know in the current, in the 2024-25 year, we're actually expecting retail cannabis sales in the province to be about $102 million. So that's actually stronger than what we anticipated and will be the first time that has exceeded $100 million in a fiscal year. And there are some variations kind of year to year, but over, and there may be timing differences at times, but generally, like I say, the earnings of the NLC will be approximate to the dividend that gets paid over time. So if I look over the past 4 years, our earnings would have exceeded what we had budgeted by about $15 million, and our dividend over that time exceeded our budgeted dividend by about the same amount, by about $14 million. So give or take some small differences. Like I say, we've had a good year this year, and as a result, we've kind of paid a larger dividend to government. We've budgeted for 206 next year, given the uncertainty around tariffs and so on that are happening in the marketplace, and the overall kind of slight decline in consumption that's happening in the province. We're looking forward to delivering on that, which would be our sixth consecutive year being north of $200 million in our dividend.
MHA Paddick. So the next couple questions will be focused on the cannabis side. So going into 25-26, what, as a percentage, what's your forecast with regards to the cannabis contribution to the overall dividend?
I'll refer to Cheryl now in a second. I'll speak to cannabis in general terms, in that the market has matured significantly over the course of 6 years. So as I said, now this past year, we will look at being at about $102 million in retail sales. Our margins on that are significantly less than what they are on beverage alcohol. So the bottom line impact is less, just given the nature of that. And also what we've seen since legalization, and it probably came as something that wasn't expected, but over the last 4 or 5 years as well, there's been a fairly significant decline in the retail price of cannabis. So if I go back to 2018, 2019, most of the modeling at that time expected cannabis to be at about $10 per gram. Right now, you're probably at about $3 to $3.50 per gram. So there's been a significant drop in the price of cannabis at the retail level in the industry. And even for the coming fiscal year that we're now in, 2025-26, we're expecting cannabis prices to drop on average about another 1 percentage point. Cheryl may be able to answer a little bit more detail on the financial impact of cannabis on this year's numbers.
Okay, thank you. Thank you to that MHA Paddick again. And I guess this is just an observation, because I've seen where a number of my veteran friends are using medical cannabis to address some of their PTSD. So I'm wondering, then on that side, are we picking up all the medical cannabis sales, or is there stuff coming in directly to them via mail from other provinces?
Our responsibility for cannabis is for the recreational use of cannabis, okay, not for the medical use of cannabis. So that would work through medical channels, through prescriptions and so on. So that wouldn't be covered by the sales that we would be reporting to the NLC.
So a potential market opportunity there. Okay, I'll switch now to on the alcohol side. So this comes back to the budget and $1 million planned to increase wholesale discounts for restaurants, bars, and lounges. And I'm just wondering, then, in regard to that wholesale discounts, what's the, I guess, amount or percentage being planned per entity?
Sorry, did you say that?
Mr. Cody?
Thank you. Just on that point, we've increased that discount rate from 5% to 10%. So I think, and that covers, I don't know if we'd have the breakdown by either restaurant, bar, or lounges. Most of them are all interspersed. So what we've done, and that is, so going from 5% to 10% is basically matching now what Nova Scotia is doing.
Mr. Paddock.
And $800,000 for compensation on products purchased by brewers, agents, and liquor express retailers. So again, I was just looking at a, on an entity base for regards to that allocation.
Yeah, we have that.
Ms. Ducote, your light's that on you. Minister Cody.
Minister Cody. I said my own name. So just for the brewer's agents, that would be a total estimated impact benefit for brewer's agents. The total is $527,000, roughly about $1,000 per brewer's agent, and I'm saying roughly. And then under Liquor Expresses, it's the total estimated impact benefit to Liquor Express operations is $317,000, or an average of about $2,200 per Liquor Express operator.
Okay. That's all the questions I have of NLC.
Thank you.
I need to further digest this over Easter weekend.
I'm sure Ms. Cody would be only happy to answer any questions.
No, but we can continue now on CFS.
If we'd be so kind to go to NDP if they have any questions. And this is the 23-24 annual report. It's been out for some time.
MHA did.
Thank you. Just a question, I guess, not so much on the annual report, but as going forward with regards to the effect of, I think, the impact of the tariff. And I know I walk into liquor stores, the American products are not there, and that's fair enough. I'm just looking at diversifying and how is the NLC managing with that?
Still wait.
I'll do the. I think with the trade dispute and with the tariffs, it's obviously a challenge because there's so much uncertainty for everybody trying to deal with that from a policy perspective and from an operational perspective. We took the step immediately in consultation with government to remove the product from the shelves from both our corporate stores and Liquor Expresses. And we've discontinued purchases from any of those suppliers. And we've worked with those, with our agents in the Liquor Expresses and that to kind of work that through the process. At this point, like I say, we're in the process of kind of bringing that product back into our distribution center, and that will be a process we will do over the next probably 2 to 3 months based on where the pressure points are, because Liquor Expresses need the space, our corporate stores need the space as well. But also, in a lot of cases, that product is out of boxes, needs to be put into boxes. So just the practical issues that we've got to do to get that back into a shape, into our distribution center that we can do something with. Over time, like I say, we're going to have to determine how we deal with that inventory, which is approximately about $3 million at cost in terms of how we deal with that. And I think we will be guided by our consultations with government on that, but also in terms of how things unfold on the tariff side, and do we get to a point whereby we either make a decision to liquidate that product or we get to a point whereby we resolve the trade dispute issues and we restore that product and put it back on the shelf. But in the meantime, our category teams have been working hard to reset the product categories so that they don't have U.S. product in it. And we've been doing that with a greater focus on locally produced product here in the province, including Rock Spirits, which is operated by the NLC. But also, like I say, we've been supportive of the campaign to buy local and buy Canadian, as we've done that as well. So if you go into our stores, you'll see promotional programs, you'll see things on the digital screens, which are supporting local and supporting buying Canadian. And as we kind of move forward, I guess, in the weeks and maybe months ahead, then we'll have to make some decisions about the U.S. inventory and how we adjust maybe medium to longer term in that respect.
Thank you. So just to follow up on that, and a couple of things with regards to, I guess, the diversification, bringing in other products, and you've sort of addressed it with regards to bringing in local products. So there's an opportunity here for local producers and so on and so forth. But in terms of other countries' wines and alcohol, I'm assuming you're reaching out, looking for maybe things that would replace the American brands The other part, I guess, in relation to that, in terms of sales, I'm assuming then that you haven't seen a decrease in the sales overall. People are, and I would assume people are, okay, you know what, I would have bought an American wine, but I'm buying more wine now from another country. So I that's the other part of it in terms, two parts, the diversification piece, making deals, looking at bringing in products from other countries, and overall, have the sale at stores been impacted? Maybe that you're noticing that, you know, since you've taken the product, the U.S. products out, there's been a decrease, or have the sales been just as consistent and people are just going to the other products?
The first of all, our category teams, they do what we call product calls. Probably do that eight to ten times a year for different categories and subcategories. So they've been working through that process to go through the product calls for new products that we can bring into the market, recognizing we're not putting U.S. products in, you know, on the shelves. So our category teams are working through that, and they will do that. There's obviously different issues if you're going to bring a product in from Ontario as opposed to a wine from South Africa. That has different implications, but they will work through that process to get the product there. Overall sales performance, we have been, it's only early, we're only a couple of weeks into the new fiscal year, but what we saw kind of from February through March and into early April, we're kind of cautiously optimistic in terms of how the sales performance have been. And I think when we look at the categories that have been affected, customers, the most loyal category for customers is the spirits category. So whether that's your, you know, your Old Sam, or whether that's your Jim Beam or whatever it might be, customers tend to be very, very brand loyal in the spirits category. That's much less true in the wine category. So a customer switching from a California wine to an Ontario wine to a French wine, that won't be, I don't think, as great of a challenge from a customer behavior perspective. The spirits will be a little bit more of a challenge, but again, we're working very, very closely with the category teams, but also in consultation with other provinces in terms of looking at the products that are the best options, given that the U.S. product are not on the shelf, and what customers, even working with looking at data in terms of where customers have been going, and here and in other jurisdictions with their buying patterns. So if somebody was originally buying a lot of Jim Beam, where is that customer going today? And making sure we have those kind of products, because at the end of the day, we still want to provide a range of products that our customers want and give our customers the very best experience we can give them.
Perfect. Thank you. That's it, Chair. Thank you very much.
That's it for that. Okay, we're going to continue on with
We're excused?
With the headings.
Thank you, everyone.
1.01 to 1.4.01. I want to thank the staff from the Liquor Corporation for coming, and we will continue on. MHA Patty, questions.
All right. So my questions now switch to loan guarantee statutory. So 1.2.01. So on the revenue provincial, can the minister provide a list of which organizations were charged for their guarantees last fiscal year, and how much was charged to each?
Siobhan Cody, certainly it's mostly hydro. It's a fee paid by hydro. There's a small amount by Fogo Island Co-op. I think it's less than $15,000. Like it's very small amount when you compare it. The rest is Newfoundland Hydro. Yeah, see, it is 15. I just wanted to make sure memory served. That's just the cost of doing business. It's kind of just a letter of the line of credit guarantee. Yeah.
Okay. Are there any new loan guarantees being considered by Cabinet at this time?
Yeah, that's it, though. Yeah, just the one that was announced in budget, the restaurant loan guarantee program. Yeah. But I'm not aware of any others.
Okay, so highlighting that one on page 25 of your budget speech, will businesses be charged for that loan guarantee?
So that the nuances of the offer have not yet been detailed, but in a general sense, no. We don't do that for example, the fisheries loan guarantee either. So it would be, they're still working through. I know they have meetings already this week, but they're still working through the details of how that program will be unfolded, because you have to consult with industry, obviously. But I can tell you for the fisheries loan guarantee, there's no cost for that.
Okay. I'd now like to switch over to debt management expenses. So 1.3.02. Last year, $1 million was budgeted, but only $100,000 spent. Can you please explain how savings were achieved?
Thank you very much. We do a, investment relations clearly. That's very important. We've been to, I think last year was Quebec, Toronto. We've been to London. We went to British Columbia, Western Canada. So there's a number of places that we visit investors. And it's very important because we find that we can then borrow from them. The investors are keen to meet with the minister and meet with the team to hear more details. It's not unusual for that to come in lower than anticipated in terms of transportation and communications costs. I don't know, Tom, is there anything you need to add to that? Generally, a substantive amount is budgeted, but we're pretty frugal when it comes to the spending of it.
That frugalness is appreciated, especially with travel. So on that note, given what was spent, I guess, last fiscal year, I'm just wondering with regards to why $1 million is being budgeted again.
Oh, yeah, okay. Sorry, I wanted to confirm with my team. Only because we're looking at broader programs. So, for example, I think we mentioned here on Tuesday, we're looking at the Asian market, the Australian market, and that will then require us to travel those long distances. When you look at this, is a pretty standard amount that they budget in this particular category, but we don't spend it unless we must. Anything else you want to add team-wise? No? Okay.
Okay. It's the significant budget variances, of course, looking at it from a managerial accounting perspective. So the next one is professional services. Last year, $2 million was budgeted, but only $1 million spent. Again, looking for an explanation on the variance.
Mm-hmm. Just what is the explanation of variance? Go ahead.
Michelle Dewar?
Less than anticipated fees. It's good.
Michelle Dewar. So we had less than anticipated professional fees in the borrowing program last year. And I think the minister did mention we were looking at a U.S. program. So that obviously has been on hold. So we didn't spend that money to establish that U.S. program last year. So that's the reason why there was less spent.
Siobhan Cody, thank you. I would say that we are anticipating setting up other borrowing programs, so you want to keep the same amount there. If you don't spend it, great. But last year, as the Deputy Minister indicated, we were setting up a borrowing program. We've halted that. And when you're setting up new borrowing programs, of course, you have to use all the professionals, lawyers, professional services that are required. You'll also find money under here, for example, for professional services like S&P and Moody's and DBRS, are found in these categories as well.
Major Paddock.
Okay. We'll switch down to 1.4.01. Loans and advancements to government entities. Can you please explain why the on-lending program to Newfoundland Hydro is and its purpose?
Thank you, Siobhan Cody. It's basically cheaper for ratepayers, for the government of Newfoundland and Labrador to do the borrowing, and that is basically the bottom line of it. We're trying to save as much money as we possibly can. The government of Newfoundland and Labrador can borrow cheaper than the entity, and therefore that's why we do it on their behalf. We work very closely with Hydro, and as Hydro has you know, expending requirements like they're upgrading Beta Spare and others that go through the Public Utilities Board, but we do the borrowing for them on Lend. Anything further from my team? No.
When did this program begin?
Around the time that we entered into government, so around 2015, 2016. 2016, there, my team was saying I wasn't in this role at that point.
Okay. We'll come over now to pensions and stats and gratitudes, statutory. Mm-hmm. So 2.1.01.
No, we're not, Mr. Petty, we're not down to that. Subsetting yet. We're doing subsetting 1.1.01, the 1.4.01. We have to clear up that setting before we move on to the next one. Do you have any questions remaining on this bunch of settings? Those headings. Do you still have questions under those headings?
Sure, I'll ask a final one then. If you got time there, might as well use it, right?
So, absolutely.
With regards to Newfoundland Hydro, so $300 million this year. Will this replace old debt that IJO has coming due?
Yes. Some of it is. Do you know how much it is, Deputy Minister? Please go ahead.
It's just hard to get the attention. Michelle Dewar. Yeah, so the full $300 million would be for
debt maturities.
Yeah.
Okay.
But we do, Siobhan? Cody, we have attached now sinking funds to hydro debt, so hopefully in the future we won't have these rollovers, right? The whole idea of attaching, and this is all part of our, you know, financial responsibility plan that we put in place within the last couple of years, is we want to be able to pay off debt rather than roll over debt. Everybody would like that.
On that section.
On that section. MHA Dean, do you have any further questions?
No.
I will ask the clerk to recall the subheadings.
Thank you, Tom.
1.1.01 to 1.4.01 inclusive, servicing of the public debt.
Shall 1.1.01 to 1.4.01.
I'm going to thank you, Tom.
All those in favor? Against? Carried. I asked the clerk to call the next.
Could I, before we move on to the next section, I just want to thank Tom Nemec, he and his team do an outstanding job for the province of Newfoundland and Labrador, and his and his team's expertise are very valued as part of the public service, but also as on behalf of Newfoundlanders and Labradorians. I didn't want him to leave without giving that him and his team the thanks that they so rightly deserve.
Thank you.
And if I could just echo Mr. Nemec, I truly. Okay. MHA Paddock, if I could just echo Mr. Nemec, truly appreciate your detail in regards to explaining some of the bonds and your lending program. So, well done.
Yeah, it's a good guy.
All right, we're going to carry on.
2.1.01 to 2.3.01 inclusive, employee benefits and other payments.
2.1.01 to 2.3.01. MHA Paddock.
Okay. So 2.1.01, contributions to pensions. Is there a plan to make changes to the Uniform Services Pension Plan to allow it to be fully funded?
Thank you very much for the question, and I will say yes. It is something that we are discussing. We're concerned about that it's only about 25% funded. So it is something that we need to discuss with our colleagues and with unions to see how we can improve that, as we have done with the Public Service Pension Plan, as we've done with the Teachers Pension Plan. And I'd be happy to kind of give you how funded they are. So the percentage of funds surplus for the PSPP, and I know that Mr. Din would be interested in this as well, the PSPP is 102%. The TPP, and I know Mr. Din's going to be interested in this, is 116%. And then you have MHA's is 132%. PCJPP is 148%. MUN is at 90%. For a total overall of about 98%. So overall, we're doing well. It is the Uniform Services Pension Plan that we will have to work with our unions and our colleagues to see how we can improve that.
How much is going into that pension plan this year for uniform services?
I'm just turning to my team. I could tell you overall what the net assets are, but. Do you know how much is going in this year? You've got to say your name and raise your
hand. James Duty. Yeah, I can tell you that I don't have the specific contributions. I can tell you what the net assets and surplus is. We generate our annual financial statements, and they do go online, so they're published. But I don't have the exact number right here with me.
Okay.
Certainly can get it.
Yeah, that would be lovely.
Siobhan Cody, thank you. Just let me tell you how many, I can tell you how many active members there are, so that might help you. Under the Uniform Services Pension Plan, there are 684 active members and 966 pensioners. Gives you a good view, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
Into the challenges, I think, with that particular fund. So we'll be working with our colleagues and to get that one straightened out. You may be interested. I think you would be, Mr. Paddock. There was a promissory note provided to the Public Service Pension Plan. I'll tell you, it's over $2,189,000,000 now. And for the teachers' pension plan, it's at $1.6 billion. So you will see in the finances of the province, of course, we have to pay that every year. Roughly about 300.
323.
Is it 300?
323.
323. I can stagger it. $323
million. Appreciate the detail on the other pension plans and overall status. Like I said, the reason I asked about the uniform service is with regards to overall risk management and the potential risks for as well and to them as well. All right, I'll move along to 2.2.01, ex gratia and other payments, non-statutory. Last fiscal year, 24-25, $124.9 million was budgeted. I am aware that some of this could have been transferred to other departments as needed.
Mm-hmm.
So of the 124.9, how much total was spent, and could I get a list of departments that it was transferred to?
So that certainly, I'll be happy to give that to you. About $168,800 was transferred to departments. And as you know, this is to help, you know, for any type of severance or retirement benefits, any collective agreements, anything of that nature. So I'll run through them. Do you want them in detail? Yes?
Or we could get it separately. We don't.
Well, I can give them to you. HCS. Was $67,488,300. Justice, and this would include like the RCMP, the Provincial Court Correction, $16,986,500. Education for teachers payroll, $8,783,800. How about if I just copy this and send it over to you, but I will have
that's
to do this.
That's right.
Yep. You're okay with just,
yep.
Do you want me, yep. I can read them, but
yep.
I can
no,
just
no,
give
just
them to you. Okay. I will get my team to do that for you.
Yep.
Just by way of explanation for the record, ex gratia is basically a block funding budget for things like severance payout, unforeseen retirement costs, negotiated salary, increased funding. And it's transferred throughout the year to the various departments as required. And usually the actuals are lower than what we've budgeted, but you'll see a slight increase. You'll see an increase in 25-26, and that's because of the next round of bargaining for doctors, RCMP, so some big categories.
Okay. That takes care of my next question, or what was my next question.
Okay.
All right. So I'm just looking for a quick explanation on line revenue provincial and the variance there. So it was budgeted 602, was actually 37.5, and for the new fiscal year back to 552.
Do you want to take that, Miss?
Want to introduce them? Elizabeth Lane. Elizabeth Lane, Deputy Minister. So this particular line, again, as you stated, it was 602.5 budgeted. It was 37.5. That 37.5 actually is with respect to revenue or recoveries collected from a legacy pension plan. It's called the HERT pension plan. It was out of a collective agreement that existed. That no longer exists, that paid additional benefits, had different special provisions for employees, and when it ended, I believe it was in 1991, employees under that program were grandparented. And this is a recovery that comes back, that is collected by PTAM, which is the plan administrator, and then it's recovered by Consolidated Fund Services from PTAN, as they do not, the HART plan is not a part. They don't administer that plan. So 37.5 that you see as the projected revise would be mostly from that recovery. Originally, we had 602.5 budgeted because there was also expected recovery from specialized work with respect to the various pension plans, from actuarial work to market studies and other consulting work that had been planned. When that work is completed, the monies or funding associated with that would be recovered from the appropriate pension plans. In this particular case, the work is still ongoing.
Okay. And a final question here on this is the debt expenses. I see there's no variance there across those lines, so I take it that is a principal based. So that's the deferred pension contributions, 2.3.01.
Okay. 2.3.01.
Oh, three. Sorry. 11 debt expenses. Yeah, so there's no variance. I take it that is that a principal? No,
that's the prom note that I mentioned to you. So P10 was $188 million over 30 years, TPP, the teacher's pension plan was $135 million, total of $323.
Okay.
It's part of what we borrow, the 4.1.
That's it for questions in this section. MHA Dean.
Thank you. Just with regards to the promissory notes, just to make sure we understand what they're for. It was part of that deal to go to joint sponsorship. That money was used to pay for the unfunded liability for retired teachers who no longer had the ability to contribute to the pension. So that was part of the deal, that government would take responsibility for that and as part of the joint sponsorship. Although it's good to see, as I was trying to point out last year, that the plan was indeed in a sort of excess, and that's a good thing, and it's maintaining that. Good management, good joint sponsorship agreement.
Well done, sir.
It was one of my legacies when I was president, so that's one of the things we were determined to make sure was fixed. I'm just curious, though. It's interesting that the PSPP is 102% funded. I know it was up around where the TPP was at one time. I'm not sure what the reasons are, but I'll ask this question in light of the trade war. And I know once plans tend to be, once plans are fully funded, the asset mix changes and you're more or less, I'm just wondering what are the concerns right now? It would be one of my concerns as investments become more volatile and things which we could count on, or investments which you could count on might become a little bit less, be a little bit riskier. I'm just wondering any concerns around this.
I will say that I think we have global volatility, but we have some incredibly good experts who understand the markets, and they have very diversified portfolios, of course. So while I'm concerned about the global context, even with diversified portfolios and with global context, I'm not hearing any concerns from board members at this point or that there's an overall volatility. But you can expect, I mean, as our own portfolios are being impacted, I would imagine other portfolios are being impacted. So there is, we do have some good experts that are working through this, but we do have multiple investor managers and service providers that are monitoring this, and we have good board members, as you're aware, on these on the joint management board. So, yes, I would think they'll be impacted. To what extent, we'll have to monitor and see.
And I guess I come at that from the concern because at some point, right now we're at 116%. It's pretty,
pretty
secure. I guess at some point, just as once it reaches a trigger here, it's either an increase in benefits such as indexing or a reduction in premiums. But it can go the other way to an increase in premiums on both sides to cut in benefits. And I'm assuming at this time, I don't know, like. The contingency, I can't see it tanking, and I don't want this to be out there somehow. That pension plans are in dire trouble, but I'm assuming there's going to be contingency plans. And I do say one thing that we made sure of, I can only say it was about the teacher's plan, is that we made sure we had the best the people on it, and that it was strictly free from any political influence on either side, whether it's the NLTA or the or government. Out of curiosity, the MHA's plan, it was 132% funded.
Yep.
I have to ask the question, how did that happen? Because because I, for many years, I don't know if there were, if was there a sudden infusion of cash, more people died off than we expected. Because I know that was one of the plans that was severely underfunded at one time.
I'll probably ask James to speak to this, but I will give you that... We did make some changes back in 2016, 2017, I think. I can remember I was here at the time, and they were pretty impactful. It is not a golden, big parachute in that pension plan. We get about 2.5%, and there's been a wage freeze, of course, as we all know, as MHA has been a huge wage freeze. But it is well managed, and I'll turn, James, is there anything you want to add to that?
Jim Duty. Yeah, I guess when it comes to the register portion of the plan, that's where we get the funded liability, or the register plan is, as you know, that when people make over a certain level of income, that doesn't go into the registered plan, and that has to be accounted for separately. Mm-hmm. So that becomes the supplementary plan. Okay. And that's funded directly out of consolidated revenue. But when it comes to the registered plan is doing well.
Siobhan Cody. Just by context, there are 40 active members, right, the MHAs, but there are 69 pensioners. So it's not a very big plan, right? There's only 113, I think, if I do my math quickly. So it's a pretty small plan, but it is well-funded at this point in time.
And if I may, then the supplementary plan, then it, would that be underfunded? I would assume that's a bit smaller than the registered plan. And the other question related to that, I'm assuming then that the contributions on both the employer and the MHAs are now sustainable amounts.
Well, remember, I think it was back, and I'm going by memory now, either 16 or 17, they rolled it back. It was 3%, and it rolled back to 2.5%.
Yeah.
I'll let James answer.
Jim Doody. When you look at the total of the registered and the supplementary plan, there is obviously a shortfall. But again, the registered plan is, when you look at what is contributed to the plan, there's sufficient current contributions made to match the obligations of the plan.
Okay, so there's no unfunded liability or anything like that, correct?
In the register plan.
There is?
No, not in the register plan.
That's what I thought. Okay. 2.5%? I'm just curious because I know teachers at one time accrued at 2.2.
Yeah.
2.22. That was many years ago. We lost that, and I'm trying to remember the rationale at the time. I was just, they were offsides with the CRA, but anyway, it went down to 2% accrual.
I don't know what it is today.
Able to, if plans could accrue more than 2.2%, or depending on what they want to pay into it.
James Doody? Okay, sorry. Each year CRA sets a limit as to what is acceptable from a contribution rate, and that's what decides what the appropriate contribution rates are. So when you, 2% is pretty well the appropriate level. When you look at anything that goes over that 2% generally, then that's considered over and above what the registered plan would allow to pay. So that would go then into the supplementary side. So to your question, yes, the 2% is in line.
Okay, and then the 0.5 then is from the supplementary plan.
Yes,
okay.
Correct.
Okay, that answers the two questions on that. I'm just wondering here, how many pre-1949 special acts, about how many people are currently collecting from pensions under this category? I'm assuming here in this case, one of them I know personally would be my mother, a survivor.
Oh, was she? Yeah. Wow, that's nice to be able to put a face to this.
To do with the railway and that, because that's my father. Wow. She would have the survivor's benefit from
that.
Well,
we're very happy to hear that, because we speak of, there's 12 recipients.
12.
So I'm very happy to know your mom is one of them, so yeah. That's good. But there are 12 recipients. I ask every year so that I could put a face to the kind of...
But this would go to survivors, so she has survivors.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, just 12.
Just
wow.
12. Just 12, right? Yeah.
That's it. Thank you.
That's it. Thank you. I'm going to ask the clerk to call.
No.
Okay, at least. You have no more questions for this section?
Contingency, treatment, or...
I'm asking clerk to call those subheadings, please. We call the subheadings.
2.1.01 to 2.3.01 inclusive, employee benefits and other payments.
Shall 2.1.01 to 2.3.03 carry? All those in favor? Again? Against? Carried.
Good job.
I asked the clerk to call the next set of headings, please.
3.1.01, contingency.
3.1.01. We will start the question. MHJ Paddock.
MHJ Paddock. So several questions here on contingency. And I guess to start, looking back at 24-25, last fiscal year, I was wondering if it's possible to get a list of the transfers and the amounts.
Sure, it's only one transfer, so I'll give it to you. It's children in care.
For that entire 22?
Yeah. Okay. Well, 21 of the 22, we dropped the other million.
Okay.
Yeah. costs of children in care are skyrocketing, and it's under review as to how we improve from a management perspective, but it is, that's why we had to put some more money in that category this year as well.
Okay, so this fiscal year, you've indicated a contingency of $200 million, I guess essentially associated with tariffs. Have any departments made any application for any of this money yet?
No. We have not determined how that money will be spent. It's best for us to understand and from the community, really, from the business community, from the unions, if workers are impacted. But at this point, where we haven't heard of major impacts, we are monitoring it constantly. We don't want to allocate that money unless it's necessary based on tariffs. So we're being very responsible and prudent on this, and of course, watching to see how or if tariffs will impact. You can recall at the original sign that this was going to happen, we were very concerned. I'll use the fishery, for example. We were very concerned about the fishery. That hasn't seemed to play out. So we haven't allocated it. I think it would be responsible for us to find out what impacts there are and then make the determinations, rather than make a determination and have to change it after the fact. And if we don't need to spend that money because we're not seeing any direct impacts, then we won't spend it.
Minister, so on that note, will you commit to public notification as any amounts are drawn from that contingency amount?
We normally table, don't we, the contingency amount after the fact. If there are expenditures, you would hear them because we would announce an expenditure. So that would be normal process.
Earlier this week, Minister, you indicated that the $200 million that's booked as a contingency was not included in the deficit.
No. It is included in the debt, but not the deficit.
So
we don't know if we're going to spend it.
So I'm just looking at things then overall. So given where we've been with Children, Youth, and Family Services, I know an additional allocation was there, but given the track record over the last few years, then there is a strong possibility that our in-year deficit could actually be a certain amount higher. There's a reasonable probability of that.
If tariffs and the impacts to workers and to businesses occur, and we feel as a province that we need to support businesses and workers because of tariffs, then yes, we would spend the money that we have in contingency. Generally, what we do for when departments have impacts, like we've seen with children in care, we have gone to the department first to see what savings are in other categories. Because as you appreciate, and I know you appreciate it, there are appropriations, and then sometimes they have to go to Treasury Board to move funds from different appropriations. They might be low in one category of a budget. You're very familiar with how that occurs. So that would be the first role, is we would check internally to see. If, for example, Children in Care, and we're working very closely, I can tell you the Treasury Board's working very closely with Children in Care, and we're trying to right-size that budget, so we've given them additional money this year. We're trying to work on some improvements to the management of the system so that we're not spending as much money in certain areas. So we're hopeful that they will be able to manage their way through this. All things being equal, if we don't spend it, it will have no impact, right?
Yep.
But if we do have to dip into it because of tariffs, we at least have it. We're prepared to do that. We're, I think that's just prudent at this point in time to have that money available should something occur. We hope it doesn't.
My final question here, I guess, is overall with regards to in-year controllership and on-ramping and off-ramping. So we're 2 weeks, and this is all with regards to risk management. So let me bear with me for a second. So we're roughly 2 weeks into the year. Brent is lower than what we forecasted. The dollar is a little bit higher. And I know there's going to be variations, and it's a volatile time. That said, you know, my quick mental math, we're already astern a station by about $7 million. You indicated that we would wait to the mid-year review to do that analysis. So that would bring us out to, you know, September, and by the time that gets out, we're looking at probably October. And then to really to make any fundamental change, you're looking at the last quarter. So, you know, I guess my question, and, you know, we could also have a significant situation where you could see a spike in oil. After the first quarter of the year, when I was in previous life, I always kept two things, I guess, nearby, and that was an opportunity to on-ramp and the opportunities needed to off-ramp. So I guess that's my question here with regards to in-year controllership with regards to where things are tracking.
Thank you for that, and you are absolutely correct in that is the responsible way to monitor, and we do. So we monitor, as you can appreciate, I'm surrounded by very competent and incredibly talented individuals, and we monitor this constantly. I can tell you that we are, we're seized with it, actually, if I can use that term, both in finance as well as in Treasury Board, because, you know, one is allocating the money, the other spending the money. So in both areas, we monitor it. And if, for example, we're seeing terrible trends, then there may be things that we do early, like it could be as early as June, where we say, okay, travel needs to, you've done this before, travel needs to slow down, you can't make this expenditure, you have to, you know, watch your hirings. There could be things that happen. It really depends as we monitor what changes that we're seeing. I refer to the fall fiscal update. That's the public face, but internal to government, we're always watching the bottom line and making sure that we can afford. Otherwise, if we're overspending, we have to come back to the House for supplementary supply or more borrowings, which is never easy to do. We have come back for supplementary supply, but for other reasons in times past. But what we really try and do is manage within the budget itself. And so you'll see if all of a sudden we're seeing not good trends, then we will ask departments to slow down spending, slow down, travel, to slow down what they're doing so that we can manage the budget appropriately. I like to use the term cut the cloth to suit the garment because, you know, kind of we've got to be careful how we're spending the money.
Yeah, and that was the reason behind my question is because there is a great deal of uncertainty risk right now with in-year fiscal management. Okay.
You're done for this round? MHAD. No questions? No. I asked the clerk to recall the subheadings.
You're done. Thank you. 3.1.01, contingency.
3.1.01, all those in favor?
Aye.
Against? Carried. Shall the total carry? All those in favor?
Aye.
All those against? Carried. Shall I tele-report the consultative funds? All those in favor?
Aye.
All those against? Carried.
Before we move it to the next, I just want to
Siobhan Cody.
Yes.
I would like to thank the incredible hard work of the Treasury Board team, the Comptroller, and as well as Mr. Doody for the efforts and work that they do every single day that that guide us. So thank you very much.
Yes, thank you all for coming, and we will continue on with the Department of Finance.
Can we take a 5 minute meeting?
Okay, why don't we take a 5 minute break?
Good timing.
All right, folks, we're ready to go, and thank everybody for bearing with us during the little break. We're going to continue with Department of Finance, and I ask the clerk to call the next set of headings, please.
1.1.01 to 1.3.01 inclusive under the Department of Finance, Executive and Support Services.
1.1.01 to 1.3.01. MHA pay.
Okay. We'll start with a broad questionnaire first. How many employees are in the Department of Finance?
You got that? Go for it.
And I guess while you're looking for that, just give me a breakdown, if you could, as well. Permanent, temporary, full-time, and part-time.
Shall do her. So we have a total of 221 positions, 106 permanent, 91 temporary, and 24 contractual. Do you want to tell them why so many are temporary?
And contractual, yeah.
So from a temporary perspective, we do have a couple of temporary programs, in particular the home heat supplement program. So they would be temporary employees. And contractual, we would have we do have some positions that are in the midst of a departmental reorg, so we don't have them fully in place yet. So once that reorg is in place, we'll post them permanent. But in the interim, we're doing contractual until we get that finalized.
Okay, and some of the other estimates, and I'm going to, there was budget allocations for this fiscal year where the ministers and officials said they couldn't give the detail on why there was an increase in spending. So, for example, in justice for supplies for the RNC, the MHA for Arbor, Maine was told that the discussion was still ongoing with the RNC commissioner on how the increase in budget would be spent. In the Department of IET, the MHA for Terra Nova was told when talking about a business investment program that two projects were close to being announced, close enough to tell finance to book the money, but not close enough to talk about the details and estimates. Could you provide some insight on the budget process and how money could be put into the budget, but the details not worked out?
I can't refer to other people's estimates or what may or may not have been said, but in the budgetary process, as you can appreciate, a department may come forward, and I'll use a specific example.
Yep.
I'll use the loan guarantee program for restaurants. So it comes through a budgetary process. You know, we've had a lot of demand from the Restaurant Association for support. How can we support them? Why don't we do similar to what we've done, to help them in two ways? We put more money in their pockets by increasing their commissions, but we could also do a loan guarantee program. And so we develop the broad stroke, saying that these are the types of supports that have been requested, and through a budgetary process, we're going to allocate monies. Then once you make the announcement that the monies are available, then you start your consultations. So I can tell you, for example, tourism has now met with the industry to say, okay, let's get into the how are we going to do this? What are the parameters around doing this? And therefore, so the allocation is there, but the program will be announced, I would say, in the coming weeks as we go through the consultation process. So that's not an unusual circumstance in that you have allocated the monies, right? You've allocated from a broad strokes, but you need to get more granular in before you can do the major announcement.
Okay, how many people claimed a physical activity tax credit for 2023. Just looking back, I guess you would have, because they're still filing.
People?
They're still filing for.
They're still filing for this year, but I can tell you, you don't have that number. Yeah, we wouldn't have it at that granular detail. We could try and would we be able to get that number? No. No way of getting
would
it?
You, okay, so would you have the total amount then that was spent?
Yes.
On the...
Can you tell me where it is? And just we're frantically, because it's not in the order, okay. We've just got to find it in Schedule A.
Page 27, statements and schedules.
27. There's multiple things here. Schedule A.
Physical activity.
Oh, there it is. Look, physical activity. Page 27 of the statements and schedules. Page 27, you'll see physical activity tax credit, $7.3 million.
Okay. It was $5 million.
It was $5 million in 24-25. It's now at $7.3 million.
Okay. Thank you. Last year in estimates, there was a discussion about core funding for community groups. It is my understanding that that discussion was about the Department of Finance building a portal mm-hmm. that all funding throughout government will be able to be accessible.
Mm-hmm.
Is there an update on this initiative?
I'm going to separate one from whether or not an organization gets core funding from the portal, just for a second, just for expediency purposes. So what the attempt here is that instead of various organizations having to go through multitudes of departments, which is the current system, what we think would be valuable is if we have one portal and then have deputy ministers come in and assess if there's, you know, project funding for them, right? And so we've had multiple discussions with organizations as to what that portal will look like. We've talked to departments, and we've kind of built, I'm going to say built, but we've kind of envisioned what that portal could be and how it could effectively work, okay? Now, there's a separate, there's a mechanism within government then that would have to occur that various departments, depending on project funding, because it depends on what the approach, and no matter, whoever is sitting in government, they're going to want to put their priorities, right? Maybe your priority is mental health, so your funding is going to go towards mental health programming. So you have program funding available in various departments for that entity. There is an ask by some to become core funded. What does that mean? Core funding would mean that they would get a stipend guaranteed every year, and you'd have to do multi-year funding for that stipend. Now, multi-year funding is a little bit challenging under the Financial Administration Act. So I'll say that, and I do think, and we should probably have a look at that, but multi-year funding is challenging under the Financial Administration Act, the mechanism of how doing it. There's also a challenge of who do you fund under core funding, right? I will say, and I understand in the city of St. John's, for example, there are probably dozens, maybe up to 100, different organizations that supply and service homelessness, right? You can't fund all of them out of the people's pocket. That would be impossible. So, you'd have to pick winners and losers, and then some organizations are going to be challenged by that. Whereas with program funding, you can allocate your monies to organizations that are delivering on those services. So while we're having ongoing discussions, and we are having ongoing discussions, we've done presentations to the name of the Community Services Council. They brought in a whole bunch of people. We've looked across government to see what's the best way of doing this. How do we get core funding for those programs that are are delivering programs on behalf of the government of Newfoundland and Labrador. So it's a little complex. We are still working our way through this because we don't want to also have an unintended consequence that you stop funding something that, you know, is valuable. And all of these programs are valuable. So right now we're still in the project phase of offering various organizations project funding. Sometimes they go up, sometimes they get more, sometimes they get less. But what the community has said to us is, look, for their improvement and their longevity, they would like to have an understanding of what funding may be into the future. I understand that because I volunteered a lot and was on a lot of voluntary boards and directors. But it is challenging. So let's just say, you know, there's a change in government, a change in direction, or something emerges like what we've seen emerge with homelessness. You may need to put more supports there. So it is a complex circumstance. But something that we're still continuously working on, and I know each department is kind of seized with this, but the Department of Finance is seized with it because I think there's got to be a better way of doing it. So we're still working our way through it is a short answer, but it is complex, and we want to get to a place where we're satisfying the needs of the organizations, but also ensuring that we're doing the right things with the people's money.
All right, MHA Perry, your time is up for this round.
Sorry.
MHAD.
Thank you.
Lots of time.
Just to clarify, with regards to the number of contractual vacancies, I didn't get that number.
No, you go ahead.
I think you had 106 permanent, 91 temporary, but I didn't get the number for that.
Michelle Jewart, 24 contractual.
Thank you very much. So will we be seeing balanced budget legislation sometime this year?
That would be up to the House leader. It is on the it is on the books. It is prepared and ready to go. I've often said, and I think you'll appreciate this, Mr. Dinn, there were skeptics to balanced budget legislation, mostly concerned that we would balance the budget regardless of the needs and concerns of the community. And I want to get to a place where we balance the budget without having impacted the people, the province, in terms of what their needs might be. So that's why we have balanced the budget in one particular year, but we've been close. I always say that as long as you're within a band, a range, and I'm going to say I like 2%, but could be, you know, well, right now we're at 3%, but as long as you're within 2% of your revenues, and my deputy might want to add, she might want to add her voice to this, but you know, that's pretty balanced, right? Like that's you're not going to be at zero, that's for darn sure. So you're either, you know, 100 to 150 million in deficit or 100 and $150 million in surplus. You've got to be careful of this. I wanted to get to a place where we were proving to the people of the province, proving to, we had some union leaders that were concerned about it. We had business community who really wanted it. So we want to get to a place where we were proving out that while we can make the investments, and we have made tremendous investments, we can also be fiscally responsible. So this year in particular, I will say, we are about 3% of revenues in deficit. I would like to see that a little bit lower, but I also know that it is not the year for us to make either changes to what we're doing to help with the cost of living, because we're still, you know, people are still having that cost of living, and we needed to make some strategic investments, and I'll use education because I'm looking at an educator, but we needed to make some investments in education. I think they're both very important and smart things to do. So being within, you know, I'd like to get to zero, I'd like to get to that place because I don't like adding to the debt, but I think it's a reasonable place to be. So whether or not we, you know, the House leader brings it forward this year, I think we're getting very close to that point. Like, as you can see in the fiscal forecast, we can get to a place of balance. And I think that, you know, I've been speaking to the bond rating agencies about this, and we can get to a place. We just have to we just have to make sure that when we get there, we understand how to manage our way forward from that. So short answer is we're prepared to bring it forward. It's up to the House leader. But the reason why we haven't brought it forward to this point is to prove out that we can get to a balanced budget, and I know we can get to a balanced budget, and being very responsible. Because adding to that debt, we have a big debt. We've got to start making sure we pay it down.
Thank you. So, in light of that that explanation, and also I think you acknowledged in the budget speech the fact of the times in which we mm-hmm. live, would you agree then that that it would be reasonable to work towards a balanced budget, but unreasonable to bring in legislation, because legislation would lock you in then and give you at least this way you now have this flexibility to address the issues. The other thing I would argue too is that while in trying to solve a deficit, the financial deficit, fiscal deficit, you can also create a deficit in terms of infrastructure supports and so on and so forth. So someone pays for it. And I look at the people, you know, that's where I'm going with it. So I come from an organization where the NLT, we balanced our budget made sure that we're in the black, but we also determined what were the priorities as well, make sure that we were looking after our members as well. So not that I'm averse to the whole notion of a balanced budget, but it comes down to as government is not a business in many ways.
Completely agree with you, government is not a business, but I will say to you that there is a discipline if you have legislation that is not there if you do not. And I'll use the future fund as an example. Having the discipline to put away a portion of non-renewable revenue and making sure you have that. I think this is very responsible. The bond rating agencies, the banks, investors are all looking at that and saying you're being very responsible by taking a portion of that non-renewable revenue. Notwithstanding we're borrowing from it, we still make a spread. But I would think that we should get to a place where we our intention, and it is a known intention, to get to a balanced budget. Notwithstanding there are times and occasions when you have to ensure that you are making investments in people and making investments that are because of a particular circumstance. In the legislation, that could be outlined. In the legislation, you could say that you could have I'll call it a bandwidth, where there may be a number of years where you do not balance your budgets because of a particular circumstance like COVID or cost of living or something, but that you would come back to being balanced. Again, it's signaling the discipline. You just told me that the organization you were involved with, NLTA, balanced their budgets, and they did it with purpose, right?
Yep.
And I think that government needs to have that purpose, because I can tell you it's easier to spend money than it is to be to not. And you have heard in this House of Assembly over the last week the demands that are out there. You know, everybody would like more money, not less. So the demands that are out there, if you have that fiscal discipline, and making sure that while you're satisfying and ensuring the strategic investments are there, but at the same time making sure you're also very fiscally disciplined, I think is a good balance.
Thank you. How much in dividends did we get last year from Newfoundland and Labrador Hydro for our offshore equity?
Do you have that?
There's no dividends.
Go ahead.
Michelle Dewar.
Didn't know if we had a problem yet.
Michelle Dewar. For the current year, 24-25, so no dividend. There was no dividend from Hydro. They would have used those internal sources for rate mitigation in particular.
Okay, thank you. What initiatives have taken place in the past year as a result of the review of the Independent Appointments Commission Act?
I didn't hear the question, sorry.
I'm sorry. What initiatives have taken place in the past year as a result of the review of the Independent Appointments Commission Act?
Oh, okay. We talked at length about this on Tuesday. Sorry.
If you've got the answer, that's fine. We can go on.
Oh, no, I can tell you. All the, I can just go off the top of my head. Everything that we've been implementing the report on the Independence Appointments Commission, David, I'm trying to remember his last name. Sorry, it's out of kilter for me. Let me go back and... David Conway. David Conway, as you know, did a review, and we've been implementing his strategic report. And I can tell you some of the things that we've done, is he wanted more advertising, for example. He wanted to expand the scope of making sure that we were going out and looking at gaining new members from around the province. So he made a number of recommendations, and we've been implementing his report.
Thank you.
There was a robust answer on...
No, that's fine. Those notes are taken care of. That was before I showed
up. I know.
Care.
Thank you.
What will be the impacts of tariffs on our financial obligations from P3s?
We have not, at this point, we have heard of no impacts with regard to any of the P3s that we have, and these are, and we're not. I'm not aware of any risk in that area. I'm looking at my finance team, and nor have we heard from transportation infrastructure of any.
Thank you. And how much did the HST holiday cost the province in the end? And I guess, have you approached your counterparts in Ottawa to see whether they will cover some of that cost?
Absolutely. it cost approximately $70 million. That's
between 60 and 70.
Yeah, it was between 60 and 70. I just don't have the number here. Between $60 and $70 million, and I have absolutely, and so has the Premier been in discussions and negotiations with the federal government to help us offset that amount.
Thank you.
Thank you, MHA. Dean, we're going to go back to MHA Paddock.
I just want to come back quickly with regards to, these community groups. Mm-hmm. Just a couple quick questions here. So, and I take it they all have to submit a report at the end, right? Mm-hmm. Is there funding held back if the reports are not held in? So coming back again to your comment on discipline.
I can say that departments work with these community groups. Some of them are more sophisticated, if I can use that term, than others. And you don't want to create a circumstance where a very important community organization are held back from delivering the services that are required because they haven't submitted a report. I will say that under the new accountability framework that we've put in place, community groups now have to sign up and sign that they will provide those reports. But I will be honest enough to say we try and work with these community organizations. Some of them, as I said, are more sophisticated than the others, and a report can be, manufactured and provided. But some others don't have that. We need a little bit of leeway. But overall, yes, community organizations fall within our accountability framework, and they have to sign off on that. And yes, they have to submit their reports and provide analysis and details as to how they fill their contractual obligations for the money they received.
Okay. And I understand the challenge there with some of these, like even though some of them want multi-year funding, it's a ongoing challenge, and you almost need, like I said, to keep that look with regards to zero-based budgeting, so that everything is fluid, and they need to be able to justify why, because as things change pan province. All right, 1.1.01, Minister's Office. So just again now some questions with regards to budgetary variance. Salaries went over budget last year by $72,600. Again, just looking for an explanation.
My assistant, my secretary, retired, and she had a significant amount of leave built up, I think 35 years of service to the provincial government. So that's her payout for a retiring employee.
Okay, 1.2.01. Salaries were under budget last year by 95.7. Again, just looking for that budgetary variance.
That is an ADM role for tax that is not yet filled. We are, as Deputy Minister has indicated, we're looking at a review of organization within the Department of Finance, and that is a position not yet filled. We have an incredibly strong executive team, and it's budgeted for, but not, we may or may not fill that role.
Okay. Thank you, Minister. Okay. Moving over 1.2.02, Departmental Operations. Again, I'm going to look at some varied budgetary variances, managerial accounting perspective. So start with salaries. Kindly look for some information with regards to the variance in the salaries line item.
You see this from time to time when you're back here again next year at 1202. There is usually quite a variance here. These are entry-level tax administration position. They're hard to recruit and hard to retain. So people move. So they come with it, they come to within the civil service. They, you know, come for a number of months or maybe a year, and then they move on. So you'll often see a drop balance there because of the timing of getting recruits. It's entry-level positions, and they move around quite a bit.
Okay, next one down, I'm just looking for some explanation why the plan increased in transportation and communications, given that it was underspent, under-revised.
It's postage. It's not, it's communications, so it's okay. Postage increase. Higher operational for postage.
Yep. Professional service, why the planned increase?
It's actually professional services, you said?
Yep.
It's actually a decrease from last year. So it was budgeted at 21, and it went down to 11. And that was savings, just lower operational requirements. So they right-sized to 18.6. So it's just lower operational requirements.
That's what I'm saying. It was under. Yeah. You only used 11 last year. So
right.
Why
go back up to 18? Only because it's such a big, big variance between 21 going down to 11 and then coming back up to 18. So they right sized it, and they'll probably right size it again next year if they're seeing that variance again.
Purchase services. I'm just looking.
Huge.
Huge. Yeah. What's being planned?
That one made me gulp, too. This is about the administration costs for the new disability benefit program. You will recall we've announced a huge, big investment for the disability community. I think it's, if memory serves, it's like $27 million. And that $400 a month increase, as well as a stipend then for their registered programs. But that's the administrative costs. And that's basically the federal finance charges to the province of Newfoundland and Labrador to administer that program and get those checks in the mail. So it's significant. We also utilize the federal department for the Coastal Labrador Seniors Food Supplement Program. You'll recall that that's under the Seniors Wellness Program. It's a stipend that we send out. I think it's $500 a month. Yeah. $500 a month that we send to those in Coastal Labrador, and to administer those programs. That's what's being. But it is, we know federal finance or CRA has the information. It's much better for them to send the checks in the administration of that program.
Okay, and then just on that same line item, from last year budget to last year as spent, the 34.4K variance.
I'm sorry.
So 796.5 to 839. Purchase services.
Oh, purchase services. Yeah. Sorry, my apologies. I didn't see what you're talking about.
The 34.4K variance.
34. It's resulting from a media advertising campaign for the cost of living. So some of the changes that we need to make for the cost of living, we have to get that information out there.
Okay, grants and subsidies, last year 13K plan, not utilized. I'm just looking for some context.
Sure, that's, you will recall we've repealed the legislation around the Atlantic Province's Harness Racing Commission. I think we repealed it last year. There's no harness racing in the province, so we don't think that expenditure is wise. So we repealed the legislation, and now so we're not paying for the Association of the Atlantic Provinces Harness Racing. We could always join back if there is harness racing in the future in the province.
Or dog racing, right?
No? Oh, no, my dogs don't race.
Okay.
They only look good.
Coming down a couple line items, revenue provincial, an increase of 41.7, 21% increase. Again, just looking for some detail.
I'm going to turn to the ADM for statistical services just to get his voice. That is, I can tell you what it is. It's the statistical data services. Doug, I don't want to take you off the topic, but that it'd be nice to hear your voice.
Doug Trask. Yeah, we provide some services to different organizations and entities, so that would be contract services, cost recovery.
Can you give me some flavor as to that?
I guess one example, there's a community accounts. We developed and service Northern Ontario's community accounts. It's very similar to our community accounts. They like the model, so we maintain and service their data requirements.
Okay.
MHA Din,
St. John's Center. Under 12.1.2.02, is the department currently examining any new ways of providing the municipalities with funding? And are there any initiatives on the horizon that will to allow municipalities to raise new sources of funding on their own?
Chiffon code. Ah, there you go. Certainly the municipal and provincial affairs would be dealing with municipalities around the province. I have heard, as you know, we've increased the municipal operating grants. That was announced in last year's budget and the year before's budget, and we've increased them significantly. But there have been discussions, I know, because municipalities have advised me that they would like to consider other ways of raising money. So that would be a conversation that they would be having with municipal and provincial affairs.
Thank you. 1.3.01, government rebate programs. I'm just wondering how many people received the home heating supplement last year?
So approximately 20,000, I want to make sure I'm giving you the right details. Supplement was available. You got to get there quickly. Okay. Okay, you can say it. And so in 2024, there were 20,000 applications received, and 18,700 were paid. So sometimes people put in an application, it might be not appropriate. Like some people put in for home heat that is not covered by the home heating supplement, like electricity, for example. And so we might have received an application and not been able to pay it, but 18,700 people received it.
Thank you. So we had that rebate on the electric heat, too. We could have paid it as well, eh?
Well, we do have a rebate. I don't. It's not a rebate. We subsidize through rate mitigation the cost of electricity, right?
Okay. So all those 20,000 or the 18,700 that you paid out, I'm just wondering, any feedback as to whether it was enough or people ran out of still ran out of oil or any feedback on the program about the amount that you would give?
No, I think it's overall well received. I mean, it is a stipend. It's not, it is an assistance of up to $500. So it is an assistance for people to help with their home heat. But I think as MHAs, we all know of individuals who still struggle.
And if I had just on these, and I would assume that many of the people who received it last year are probably people who received it in years past, I would assume. Is there any discussion with them or saying, look, maybe there's an opportunity here to look at ways to convert to, like whether that's heat pumps or whatever else? And I fully realize, of course, that comes with it the ability to pay the upfront cost.
And there are a tremendous number of programs available to assist with that. I can tell you over time what we're seeing is a decrease in the number of people who are requiring this service. So I can only assume that some of them are converting from oil to electric.
Okay.
And,
appreciate it. Perfect. That's it for me. Thank you.
That's it for questions. MHA Panic, do you have more questions?
Oh, yes. So 1.3.01, government rebate programs.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm looking for here is an overview of what programs are contained in that budgeted amount.
Certainly, the home heating supplement program that we've been discussing, that is one of them. As well as the Coastal Labrador Seniors Food and Heating Supplement Program. I think that's the only two.
So the oil to electric, that's covered through the...
Through environment.
Okay. So as a fairness to staff, you said 91 staff, temporary staff, are assigned to these two programs. And these two programs have been ongoing for a while. And I'm just looking at, I guess, fairness to the public service is to keep people in a recurring temporary. So is there any analysis there with regards to converting some of those people to full-time?
So I'm going to turn to the Deputy Minister, who obviously...
Yeah. Michelle Dewar. So the total temporary 91 is not all for those rebate programs. A portion of it would be, but not the full 91. I'd have to get you a breakdown of how much are for... Unless they have it. Yeah, we'll have to get it for you, because I don't know how much of that is temporary, but it's not the full 91.
Yep, but what...
So again, to come back to, I guess, my general comment here is, we've had a number of these programs that have been recurring for a number of years. So to keep people in a temporary position, it's just a matter, like I said, of looking at being fair to some of these staff. Mm-hmm. If they're full-time, then there's a greater flexibility for them to move within the public service internally. So...
Even those that are temporary can still do that. That's why you have such turnover in those positions.
Okay.
Sometimes we need them temporarily because the program, runs from a 6 month basis. For example, you can with the home heat, we'll put out a call for home heat, sometime this summer, leading into the fall, and then by this time of year, it's almost finished. So sometimes it's temporary from that perspective. But I think you're I will turn to the deputy minister and say that I think there's always that kind of view to how do we ensure those temporary positions, if they're required full-time, how do we make them full-time? So I turn to you. They can apply internally, though, just for clarity. Go ahead.
Michelle Dewar. So we'd always have some component of temporary in the department based on, as the minister said, short-term work. There would be project-based work as well that would have temporary employees. I did mention earlier, too, that we are in the middle of a departmental reorg, so that has not been finalized yet. So we will have competitions to place some temporary people into permanent jobs. That's a process that's ongoing. It's just not at this point in time finished yet.
Okay. Oh, yes. So all meeting, let's say to fuel a supplement, how a number of residents view it. So there is a variation across the province. So has there been any in the actual price, right? So Labrador. So has there been any consideration of then looking at, I guess, a regional variance with regards to that supplement?
Siobhan Cody? Okay. Sorry, I had to wait for my light. I can say that we've looked at Labrador a little separately from Newfoundland and Labrador. As you know, I just told you about the coastal program, the Coastal Labrador Seniors Food and Heating Supplement Program that gives them an additional stipend. But across the variance across the province, no, we have not gotten into that kind of, you know, segmented view. We've put the stipend the same across the entire province. If it's something that you think it would be valuable, I don't know how, you know, just from an administration perspective, it might be only small numbers that would get a $50 more or whatever, but if it's worth looking at, we can certainly do that.
Yeah, and the reason I asked that is based on what the PUB does with regards to the max for fuel prices at the, you know, retail across the entire province. So that's broken out regionally, and so shouldn't, be that difficult to have some slight variance with regards to potentially given a rebate.
It's just the point in time. So what we would have to do is say, you know, put a section. If you look at regions across the province, what I think you're suggesting is, you know, I'll say in the Northeast Avalon be 500, in Central it will be 550 based on, yeah, it's something that we could certainly consider over time.
Yeah, and that's just because of the actual
variances.
Cost based on what the PUB is defining as max pricing. All right, I'm going to pass to my colleague from Bonavista for a question or two.
Dear Patty.
Just one query, and one, I know I certainly appreciate the in-depth answers and the knowledge. I think you're probably even competing sometimes to answer because you know your stuff. And that's great to view from here on the sidelines. This is one question that I brought up before in the House of Assembly, and I just wanted to bring it up now.
I mentioned before on the CD Howe Institute's rates budgets across the country as well as the federal budget, accessibility, reliability, and timeliness are the three probably themes that they look at. And the genesis, I guess, of their doing their analysis is the interpretation of the budget for the average resident. For someone to look and be able to glean the information that we want to be able to present to them, and I guess with a degree of clarity. And I know sometimes we sit in our caucus, and you might struggle sometimes with interpretation, and you might even listen to the questions that we ask, and you will say that then it's an understanding of it. So the question would be, and I only have that one just for curiosity, is that we weren't rated very high. I think the latest one, C-, We were with the federal government, and PEI may have joined us this year, whereas last year I think it was just us and the federal government. I think Doug is probably acknowledging. Can you speak to that as to what it is to drill down that we're not doing?
So we're
in their minds?
We're making bigger, more and more effort to try and raise our score, if you would.
Yep.
That's why in the last number of years, I'll just use this as an example. We tried to get our budget in by the end of March, right? Because that gives us 2 points. Trust me, I'm seized with that 2 points.
Yep.
You know, we were April 9th this year. You know, there were a few unusual circumstances why we were. But, you know, my goal is to get those, I think it's 2 points, isn't it?
It is two points by the end of March.
Yeah. So it's pretty subjective. We were only a week out from that. So it's pretty, just to get those 2 points. But here's what we've been doing. So we have, we've broken out, so the budget speech is quite long for a purpose. It's not because I like to hear myself speech. It's to give as much detail, even though sometimes it's, you know, it's a lot of detail in a budget speech, but people can walk away with the budget speech, and it's pretty plain language. We do all the different breakouts, for example. I'm trying to remember what they're called.
Those sheets.
Fact sheets. We do all the different fact sheets.
Yeah.
And the reason is you can pick up a fact sheet that talks about health, a fact sheet that talks about education, and it's just very simplistic, but you know, very simplistic bullet language for that purpose.
Okay.
Right? So we've also done things like the statement and schedules. We've broken that out and made them as comprehensive with more details up front. And I want to congratulate both David and Michelle for doing that. This is relatively new. And, you know, for breaking it down and having it separated out from the estimates book.
Yeah.
So we're making best efforts to ensure that we are trying to be as clear and as plain and as comprehensive as possible. We also do, you know, brochures to send out to people, just with the detail, trying to make it a little bit more simplistic. And, of course, everything's on websites. We do shareables. We do television ads, all to make it a little bit more user-friendly.
Thank you, Ms.
We're going to keep working on it. Okay. Oh, maybe David. Well, David would like to say something.
David Drover, thanks for the question. Actually, CDA report has been a bit of an IR for quite some time, from my experience.
It's been what?
There's a lot of history to CDA.
Yes.
And how they do their evaluation. There's also much to learn in comparison between the various jurisdictions and the true differences that exist that are not evident from the CDA report. We continue to provide feedback to the organization as to how our budget and our public accounts documents meet those criteria, but they failed to listen to that feedback.
Oh, that's fair enough.
No. Thank you. Your time is up. MHA Dean, did you have any further questions on this topic? You don't? Would you like another? MHA Petty, would you like some more time?
No, that's good.
You good?
Thank you. Good.
MHA Petty, do you have any more questions on this topic?
That's good. No, that's good.
All right, I ask the clerk to call the subheadings. Please call the subheadings, please.
1.1.01 to 1.3.01 inclusive, executive and support services.
1.1.01 to 1.3203. All those in favor?
Aye.
All those against? Carried. I ask the clerk to call the next set of subheadings, please.
2.1.01, financial administration.
2.1.01, MAJ Petty.
2.1.
I can go to MAJ Dean and come back to you if you like.
Yep.
MAJ Dean? No questions? MAJ Petty, when are you ready?
No, I'm good.
Oh, right MAJ now. Petty?
Right now.
I totally missed that. I got
so focused on the CDL and
me too.
Look, I'll just give you the Coles Notes version. This is where the federal money, the federal government program money comes into our budget. We reallocate it out to departments. The only the little bit of variance between 24-25 and 25-26 is the gender-based violence program. So it's pretty straightforward.
With that, I guess, and with the possibility of a federal recession, mm-hmm. if you look at where things are tracking, do you forecast any risk to any of the transfers this fiscal year?
It's a very good question. I will say that, so I'm going to say it this way. Our risk in Newfoundland and Labrador is probably less than other provinces. Mm. We're exposed by about 20% to the federal government. I can compare that to New Brunswick at 38%. But at this point in time, most of... So we receive, I think it's in December, we receive a letter each year that outlines what we can anticipate from the federal government. Notwithstanding any new program or something of that nature, but it, in a general sense, what we can expect, for example, in social transfers and health transfers. So we know with some certainty in December of each year what we're going to receive, and that's what we utilized in the forecast. So it's kind of a commitment on behalf of the federal government, but we don't know if there's going to be programming changes or things of that nature.
And they're using Stats Canada for a lot of their numbers, mm-hmm. right? So that's all... Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So we're not as exposed, and we have some surety as to into what we are expecting to receive, but we don't know what we don't know at this point.
Yeah. That's good.
MHA panic?
That's good.
You good?
Yeah.
All right. I asked the clerk to call the headings, please.
2.1.01, Financial Administration.
2.1.01, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Against? Carried.
The total.
Shall the total carry. All those in favor? All those against? Carried. Shall I report the estimates of Department of Finance? Carried. All those in favor?
Aye.
Against? Carried. All right, the next meeting of this committee is May 12th at 9 a.m. And first of all, I want to thank everybody for coming, all the officials that have left and the ones who have stayed, and we thank them for their time. And I know everybody would like to have a few words to end. So, Minister Cody?
It's probably one of my favorite things in government is the estimates process, and I really thank the researchers, the analysts for all their in-depth review, as well as members of the House of Assembly and all of us for being here. But I wanted to make sure I really thanked as well the team of the Department of Finance. As I said earlier, I've never worked with the most, as dedicated, determined, thoughtful, professional group, and their efforts every day on behalf of the province of Newfoundland and Labrador are outstanding, and I want to make sure we said that. I said that before I ended.
Thank you. And Chair Penny, would you like to have some closing remarks?
Okay. There's delight. I just want to thank, again, Minister and your officials for being here and the detail that was provided, particularly, when we were in period 13 and also period 1. So navigating a fiscal year close and a fiscal year start as a unique challenge. We're in a period of significant volatility. And I think some unique challenges on the Department of Finance. I truly appreciate that. But also, as I said to the ADM Trust, there's also some unique opportunities as well with regards to some of our resources. So full speed ahead.
MHA Dean.
Well, Minister, and to your staff, I know it, certainly with regards to the tariffs, I would say we've gone from anger to, I think, sort of a steadfast approach right now. And, you know, I think there, you read some of the articles where Canadians are going elsewhere other than the States, and they're looking inward and to other places. So I think we'll get through this. It'll be some rough water, but I don't think it's going to sink the ship by any means.
All right, thank you, everybody. I ask for a mover to adjourn.
Happy Easter, everybody.
A mover to adjourn. M.H.J. Dean. Second by Minister Studley. All those in favor?
Aye.
All those against? Carried. Have a safe weekend and happy Easter, everyone.